Hello, welcome back. It's a beautiful day out here in Birmingham, Alabama. And so Chuck and I are sitting out on the deck and listening to the birds and enjoying the cool breeze. And are you ready to rock some relationships, Chuck Stokes?
Oh, I'm ready. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right,
sorry,
let's do
football
this.
Football season.
And Clemson has an off week this week, so we don't have any Clemson game to get excited about. Going to see our Samford Bulldogs tonight, though.
Yeah.
5-1.
Go Dogs.
20. So we are sitting out here on our lovely deck, which needs some repair. And we have
How long have you been promising me to fix the deck?
Yeah, that's what I was about to
Definitely
say.
Definitely well over a year.
And not just fix the deck, but we've since we moved into this house, we've been saying we were going to add on to it and make an addition to the deck.
Lies, all lies. No,
well, just hasn't happened yet.
It'll happen. This deck is not yet falling over, so we're good.
When I consulted with your dad about building a deck, because he's built a deck before, and I was saying, like, I think we want to build a deck. He drew up some blueprints for us to do it.
Yeah.
And one of the things I love about your dad is when he builds something, he builds it to last.
Oh, yeah.
And so showed me the blueprints, and then he brought out his big drill that had a big auger on it, and he said, you know, we'll drill right through and put bolts, hurricane bolts, this thing together. He said, and if the storm comes or a flood comes, your deck is still going to be there. He builds it
even if we have no house, we can live on the deck.
That's right. The deck will still, we could be under the deck or on top of the deck.
Right.
Even if our house blows away. And that reminds me of a scripture.
Oh, does
I
it?
Bet you can think of,
does it?
Of what the scripture is.
I think
is.
So.
So Jesus in Matthew 7, 24 through 27 says this, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash.
Mm.
So, in talking about dating relationships, in the last podcast, part two of this series, we talked about what's the prize that you're trying to win. Well, ultimately, the prize is holiness. And if your vocational path is through marriage, then you have to train for that. You can't just show up to marriage and expect to have a successful, happy, healthy marriage.
Right.
You have to prepare for it. And so this podcast is all about talking about how to prepare for that, how to get yourself ready really for whatever your vocational calling is, but specifically for those folks who feel called to marriage. How do you get there? And how do you get there ready for the challenge of that vocation and the joys of that vocation? So in the last podcast, we also talked about ways not to do it. You know, when people just show up to the altar and think, this is going to be successful, right?
Right.
And then we also talked about the divorce training model, which is kind of the dominant model in our culture right now. It doesn't mean everyone who does that is going to get divorced, but it's just a poor way to do it. It's a poor way to train yourself if your goal is a till death do us part, happy, healthy marriage. So we're finally going to get to some positive steps, some positive tips. What kind of training should we do if you want to build your house, your future household, on the rock? How do you do it? So I've got a couple virtues here.
Oh, great.
So there are seven cardinal virtues, sort of the top virtues that the others kind of hinge upon, that are named in the catechism. And four of those are the human ones, where we really have to cultivate those virtues by our own effort. Of course, always with God's help. But these are virtues, ideally, in a good society, every person would cultivate these virtues. And I'm going to pick one of those that I think is especially important to make yourself a great future spouse.
Yeah.
But would also make you a great priest or religious in the future as well.
Just a good woman or man.
Absolutely.
In general.
On the path to holiness.
Yeah, citizen and parent and all those things.
And then there are the three theological virtues, faith, hope, and love, or charity is what we'll talk about today.
Okay.
And those are the ones...
So charity is and love, are you saying they're the same thing?
They're the same thing, yeah.
But when I think of charity, I think about like giving money to the poor. And love, I think of like, I don't know, something a little more...
Yeah, it's the same word. I mean, we use the charity commonly to mean sharing things with others, but in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, it uses the word charity to mean that kind of more holy love, not just not romantic love, but a self-giving kind of love. In that trio of faith, hope, and love, it's charity, a specific kind of love.
Because when we think of charity, think of giving. And so in this case, the Catechism is talking about a kind of love that is a giving kind of love.
That's right. So let's talk about that one first.
That makes sense.
It's one of the three theological virtues, three cardinal theological virtues. Mm-hmm. And the theological virtues we can't do on our own. God infuses that into our soul. And then we can't do the other ones without his help.
Okay.
But the theological virtues come from God and flow through us. We have to cooperate with him. But charity is all about loving God above all things and loving your neighbor as yourself. So what do you think would be some ways you can cultivate that theological virtue in your life?
So to cultivate it, I guess to practice it, like putting other people first in situations, or trying to see something from someone else's perspective, being willing to sacrifice for the good of someone else.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, are these good answers?
Those are great answers. I mean, it's all those little day-to-day things that you can do to, as the scripture says, honor others above yourself. And like you said, just in day-to-day life, looking out for the needs of others. It's a self-giving kind of love, just like Christ showed for us on the cross and really in his whole life. And because charity, it flows from love of God above all things, because the more we draw close to God, the more he's going to draw us out to love other people. So one of the key ways you cultivate charity in your life is by staying close to the sacraments, by frequenting Mass, by frequenting confession, availing yourself of those opportunities to draw near to God by daily prayer.
Yes. So that makes a lot of sense, because I was immediately thinking about things I could do in my own strength, about like habits that I could cultivate myself. But I love that really the core is going to be, especially since it's a theological virtue, right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Then I need to go to God for the ability to do that.
Yeah, it really starts there.
Mm-hmm.
But then it does extend out to how we show care for others. And every day, I mean, you know, our kids are 14 and 12 right now, and we want to encourage them to care for each other and for their friends well.
Yeah.
You know, you can you can start practicing this from a young age. And parents, as parents, we should encourage our children to practice this theological virtue of charity. And the more you get used to preferring someone over yourself, and thinking about how can I love someone else instead of focusing on what our generation, what our culture would tell us, which is how do I get mine?
Mm-hmm.
How do I focus on getting what I need out of this relationship? Charity is different. It says, what are the needs of the other and how can I meet them in a just and holy way?
Yeah. And I know like when I go to Mass, and especially if I meditate on like the crucifix or on a scripture that talks about all that Jesus did for us, I start to be humbled and I'm more willing to put others first because I have a better view of myself, you know, and how much Jesus did for me.
Right. Now, obviously, charity is a subject so big, we're just, you know, barely tossing a pebble in the ocean in talking about it. And it's something that really is as many good things as you could read about it. It's something that is best practiced and experienced before God. Availing yourself of the sacraments, taking advantage of those daily opportunities to die to yourself just a little bit on behalf of others. Practice that, and that prepares you for your lifelong vocation and will prepare you specifically for marriage. Okay, so the human virtue that we want to talk about is temperance, one of the four cardinal virtues in the human category, where we really need to be proactive on these and put forth effort to develop temperance in our lives. Now, here's another word that is used a couple different ways, just like charity was. So what do you think is meant by temperance?
Temperance. Well, the first thing I think of is don't drink too much.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's really, because that's what I tell the kids, drink, but we are not drunk and we don't drink in situations where it's not safe or or in order to cope with life, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
So, I don't know. Is that it?
It's another case where the common use of the word, not that you use this word, not that charity or temperance get used commonly very much, but where the common usage of the word just sort of focuses on one small part of the real big idea.
Yeah.
So in temperance, you know, that it got associated with not drinking too much alcohol, that kind of thing, is only one potential example of how temperance could be practiced.
Okay.
But really, it's all about taming the appetites that we have. That's what temperance is about, right? So God made our bodies good. He created us.
Sorry, there's a truck backing up somewhere.
That's the risk of doing the podcast outside.
That's okay. Right? It's so nice. Okay, carry on. Sorry.
Hopefully our listeners can kind of take in the outdoor ambiance,
including
the truck backing up.
We're not even charging extra for this ambiance.
There you go.
Mm-mm.
It's all about taming appetites.
Mm-hmm.
There's good things like food that you can have and you should have, but too much of a good thing is bad. And so temperance allows you to recognize what things are good to have, because some things aren't. I mean, you don't need to.
You need zero cigarettes.
You need zero cigarettes. There you go. It's not something that you should ever do to partake in. It's not good for your body. So recognizing the good from the bad, having those good things in the right amounts and in the right timing.
Yeah, that's true. And that totally would prepare you for marriage, because with, you know, intimate stuff. I want to keep our podcast where I can click the clean button when I post it. But, you know, you will be in a relationship where you can enjoy each other physically, but that it has to be in the right timing. And like, you know, it's just within the bounds of marriage. So it wouldn't be with other people.
That's right. And learning to practice temperance. So, I mean, obviously in physical intimacy, that would be one very important area in terms of preparation for marriage.
And if you can't practice it before marriage, it doesn't bode well for you practicing it after marriage.
That's so true.
Yeah. Marriage doesn't suddenly make you the super self-controlled person.
Yeah. That's why if you can't practice that, it should be a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's your boyfriend or your girlfriend who doesn't want to practice it, or whether you yourself realize, I don't want to practice temperance in regards to physical intimacy. Recognizing that, you're like, hang on a second. If I can't practice temperance here, I need to go back and discern, am I ready for marriage? Am I ready to be in a serious relationship like this?
Yeah.
Because temperance is so important, then when you get in marriage, being able to manage those appetites, because there are going to be all kinds of temptations and opportunities, not just in physical intimacy, but, you know, greed with money or something like that.
Yeah.
All kinds of things that can draw you away.
Or even just having your own way, having things the way you want them, you know, getting your preferred food or whatever. I mean, all these little things that can cause big fights in marriage. If you're just stuck on get mode, you know?
But if you have that ability to delay gratification,
it
is such a gift in marriage.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, it's not just delay. Like, you don't need this kind of gratification at all.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of good things that if you can wait on them, hey, we want to build this deck on our house, but you know what? We can't afford it right now. We don't need to go put that on a credit card. We need to wait and save up, and then we can enjoy that thing in good timing.
That's right. That's a really good point. Are you just saying that so I quit nagging you about the debt?
No, just an illustration. Okay, so those are a couple ways you can prepare. You can train yourself. There are a lot of different virtues. We just picked two that we think are very important in terms of being prepared for marriage, temperance and charity. We want to cultivate those all our life long. But if you want to be prepared, if you want to train and be ready to have a happy, healthy marriage one day, get started.
Virtues are the key.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get started yesterday on these.
Yeah.
All right. So one other thing we want to talk about. If there's a preparation, there's also a process.
Okay.
We talked about the divorce training model of our culture that really prepares, you know, is a process that sets you up for a divorce kind of mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever the going gets rough, you get going. And that's what that model says. You build up intimacy until
it's not fun anymore.
It's not fun anymore.
Or it doesn't feel
it's
good anymore.
It's too hard.
Yeah.
You're not getting your own self-satisfaction, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And not that there aren't cases where people need to get out for their own safety. Of course there are. But we're talking about just the normal, non-abusive situations where it just gets too difficult. Or according to those folks, because we haven't practiced keeping our promises.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about a better process.
Okay.
And here are three principles for it. First, intentionality.
Okay. Intentionality.
Right.
Like knowing what you want and letting your actions work toward that instead of just like randomly doing what feels good in the moment.
Yeah.
Okay.
So much of our culture is about serendipity and romance. And romance is a beautiful thing. So it's important for the man and the woman to be intentional, to be clear about what it is they want and what they're doing. And that doesn't take the fun out of it.
That's right, because we're intentional about our careers, you know? And like when you're in college, you take classes that'll work toward what you want to achieve in life. And that doesn't take anything away from your career, you know?
Right. I mean, and romance is a good thing. And really, romance will happen when two people meet one another and sparks fly. That's going to happen. That's chemical. God built that into us. So as almost a shortcut for compatibility. But those kinds of things are going to happen. You don't have to think everything has to be spontaneous or romantic. That kind of romance happens at the beginning, and it goes up and down. In marriage, you cultivate that. You create moments for romance. But our culture is obsessed with that feeling, those feelings that naturally happen at the beginning of a relationship, and tries to extend it. And when those begin to fade, people say, oh, this isn't good, or it just doesn't have that magic or whatever.
Yeah, when it starts to take some work and some intentionality, you said, some effort. Maybe a little planning and working out, you know, why are we arguing? How can we work through this? Like sometimes people want to bail at that point.
Yeah. And so really people, this is a check to see, you know, how serious are you about this? Do you really want to be married? Do you really feel like this is your vocational calling? Because if you do, then you need to take the process seriously as well. Again, not that you don't have fun. Have fun with it. You know, plan fun times. Do spontaneous and fun things. But intentionality is key if you want to have a process that's going to get you to the finish line that you want to reach, which is holiness.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, the second thing is to match intimacy with commitment. We talked about in the Date to Win, the first podcast for Date to Win, about how intimacy goes up as the number of people you're sharing it with goes down, and vice versa. And that intimacy, human intimacy, is the kind of thing that needs commitment around it, like a container of commitment to protect it, because it's such a powerful thing. It's like nuclear energy. In order for it to be effective, it needs to be contained in something.
Mm-hmm.
So the more intimate we become with a person, the more we're going to want some sort of commitment around that. It's why people want to say something like, we're best friends. When they've shared a lot of deep things with one another. And it's why you get the DTR. You know, why someone wants to define the relationship. It's because the intimacy level has gotten to such a place where there's insecurity if there's not some commitment around it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, unfortunately, in our culture, we really only have one intermediate commitment left before marriage, and that's engagement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes people will sort of create pre-engagements and things of that nature. For some people, think cohabitation is a commitment stage along the way. We talked about earlier how that's really not a good idea at all.
And we have a couple couples who are college student ministry who are doing betrothal. So that's like a specifically Christian stage, I guess. And I don't know much about it, but it sounded really interesting.
Well, and we learned about and used an intermediate commitment stage called courtship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what we called it. And people may use that term in different ways, where we entered into a specific time of discernment. Like, we weren't engaged yet. The whole purpose of courtship was we are committed to one another for this time.
Mm-hmm.
It was like about a 6-month period. And during this 6-month period, we're not going to date anybody else. Like, there's no breaking up. Like, there's a commitment in that 6-month period. And the commitment was, during this time, let's discern with God's help and the help of our community whether or not we should get married. We already knew we had the romantic love, That part wasn't hard to figure out, right? That's organic. That's natural. But then we needed to answer the harder question, which is, should we get married? Is this God's call for our life? So we took that 6-month period when we were committed to one another. Mm-hmm. And so there was no worrying if we had a difficult conversation when we were trying to figure things out. Oh, is he going to break up with me? Is she going to break up with me? We took that off the table and said, it's a breakup-free zone. You know, we're committed for this amount of time. Let's figure this thing out. And so having intermediate level commitments before engagement to help you figure things out can be really important. And it's important that that commitment level matches the intimacy that you're at. So if we're sharing deep conversation about whether or not we should get married, we should probably put some kind of intermediate level commitment around that for security so that we can have those conversations without always being worried about putting our best face forward so that you don't break up with me or I don't break up with you.
Yeah, I really appreciated the courtship. It was great for me because I was able to just kind of relax a little because I wasn't committed for life. I knew that when the end of it came, because we had an end date, that I could still walk away, you know, with my dignity intact, because we agreed that when this end date came, either of us could walk away. But I knew that until that time, we were going to be enjoying each other and committed to each other. And I didn't have to worry about, do I really like him, or, you know, does he really like me? I mean, at that point, obviously, it was beyond like. It was, should I marry him, you know?
Right.
And it was great. It was very freeing.
We knew we were in love.
Yeah.
But that doesn't automatically answer the question of whether
or not
we should be married.
It really doesn't. You need, like, a safe space to question and ask the really tough stuff. Like, how many kids do you want? And, you know, what do you think about, I don't know, paying our taxes or not paying our taxes? Clearly we pay our taxes. But, you know, these are things that you have to talk about. Like, what kind of mess would you be getting yourself into, you know, or what kind of mess is he willing to get into? You know, it just, we had to be really honest with each other and be able to ask hard questions.
And commitment allows you to do that.
Yeah.
It gives you the safety in which to do that.
Yeah.
So flipping this on its head a little bit, there can be times when being intentional with and matching intimacy with commitment means that you are intentionally unattached to anybody. You may have a season of life where, you know, look, I don't need to be in a committed relationship right now. Mm-hmm. I need some time to figure this out. I need some time to meet other people and kind of figure out what my vocational calling is. There can be seasons of life when you need to be intentionally uncommitted.
Yeah.
In fact, I would recommend, like, you know, students who are going to college, think in terms of your freshman year at least. Don't get into a deep committed relationship your freshman year. Intentionally meet lots of people. You may find someone who you really want to go deeper with, and you say, you know, you tell them, I've made a commitment. I'm not, you know, going to enter into a serious dating relationship my freshman year, but I enjoy hanging out with you. And you hang out with that person, but you don't just keep hanging out with that person and sort of build up intimacy without a commitment. You intentionally go hang out with other people too. And then sophomore, junior year, if there's that person that you really hit it off with, then follow up, you know, be intentional about going a little bit deeper in that relationship. We know focus missionaries have to have a dating fast, is what they call it, in their first year as a missionary. And that's an important time for them because they've got too many things going on. There's too many ways in which confusion can enter in. So they are intentionally uncommitted for that first year of service as a missionary.
Yeah.
And there are times in our life when we need to take that approach. So there's a time when you need to be committed to one person in order to discern things, even before engagement, but there also are times in people's lives when they need to be intentionally uncommitted in order to meet more people, in order to figure out their own vocational goals, those kinds of things. All right, so one more principle.
Okay.
Consulting your community. So why do you think that would be important?
Because when you're in the middle of your own decision-making or your own little whirlwind of life, you don't have the outside perspective that other people might have. And if you've not walked the same path before, you don't have the same wisdom as someone who's walked through it before.
Yeah, absolutely. You need other people to speak into your life. I mean, think about all the people in a college setting anyway, that we surround college students with to help them figure out what they're going to do for work.
Right.
You know, they have this
advisor. What your major should be. Right.
Career Development Center. You get all these people who feel like when someone's a college student, they have permission to speak into their, you know, to speak into their life and say, well, what's your major? What are you thinking about doing with that? People
right.
ask those questions. But our culture has carved out romantic relationships in such a way that even parents don't feel like they can say anything to
That's
young
true.
People.
Yeah, that's funny because, like, some people need relationship tutors. But they'll go get a tutor for calculus, but they won't ask advice on, like, how their romantic relationships are going.
And how important a decision ultimately
right.
is it who you spend the rest of your life with?
Yeah, because when you get your first job, you don't go up to the altar and swear to stay in this job for your entire life and to honor this job until you die.
That's right.
But you're going to do that with a spouse.
So it's incredibly foolish to think that two 18-year-olds, two 22-year-olds, even two 25-year-olds should figure this lifelong decision out all by themselves.
Right.
You need to yeah. open up your relationship to the people in your community. And going back to the courtship thing that we did, that was one of the essential pieces. We said, we told people what we were doing, and some people thought, well, that's a weird thing. Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, our culture doesn't have a good model. But we said, you know, this is what we're doing,
but some
and we
people,
want your help.
Some people were like, that's awesome. I want to do that with my boyfriend. So some people really saw the value of it.
That's right. Yeah, we had a mixed response. But,
yeah.
But even the people who weren't quite sure what we were doing, if they were folks we felt like could help us,
mm-hmm.
we would say, you know, this is what we're doing. It might seem strange, but if you see anything, we want you to pray for us. And if you see anything in our relationship that you think we need to talk about, issues we need to work through, you have permission to talk to us about that. And we
please,
want you
speak
to do
up.
That.
Hey, if you see something.
Say something.
Say something.
That's right.
Right.
Exactly.
Yes.
So it's so important that we include our community in this huge decision of vocational discernment and specifically discerning marriage when you're in a relationship. So those are the three principles. There is.
Say them again.
All right. So be intentional.
Be intentional.
Match intimacy with commitment.
Match intimacy with commitment. Okay.
And consult your community.
Okay. And then how? Where do the virtues fall in? That's what you talked about first.
The virtues are what we need to be training in long before we even start thinking about dating. Ideally, parents help their kids start cultivating
okay.
those. When you get into the teenage years and certainly in the college years, you need to be intentionally cultivating those virtues. That's training, ultimately for sainthood, but
uh-huh.
in the meantime, for your vocational path to sainthood.
So if you're called to marriage, the virtues are like how to get yourself marriage material.
Exactly.
Okay.
Like we said in the earlier podcast, you don't just show up to Mount Everest and think you're going to climb it. You have
right.
to train for
yeah.
it. You have to prepare it for it. The virtues are the way that we prepare for a happy, healthy marriage
mm-hmm.
and holy marriage.
Yeah. That's great, Chuck Stokes. Thank you for sharing all your dating wisdom with us. I personally can attest that being married to you is great.
Well, thank you very much. And likewise.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us on the podcast today on this Date to Win. If you have questions, even specific questions about your own relationship that you would like for us to talk about and discuss and answer your questions, please send those in. And how can they do that, Betsy?
It's contact@chuckandbetsy.org. And then you can also go to our website, which is chuckandbetsy.org. C-H-U-C-K-A-N-D-B-E-T-S-Y.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.